30-minute reviews, beware of spoilers, and exploring hyperspace lanes are all available ad-free. But if you want to support the show, you can go to bewareofspoilers.com and click the support button that's available on the Spotify website. Thank you. Good evening, and welcome to 30 Minute Reviews. I am Adam. We are here today to talk about some of the news that we didn't cover last week because I forgot, and also some news that broke in the last few days. As well as we're going to do a quick little housekeeping thing for you to keep track of what's going on here. So, if you've listened to this show since the beginning, and thank you if you have, you know that we started out doing movie reviews. We did news and movie reviews. We've gone a little bit by the wayside with the movie review part of it, because let's be honest, it's a very time-consuming part of this, on top of all the stuff we watch for Beware of Spoilers. So finding time to watch movies is a little bit difficult. So what I found may solve this problem is, since we've migrated over to Spotify, and we now use Spotify instead of Spreaker for our hosting, there is a way we can do this a little bit cleaner, so that way we spend less time it's easier to fit things into the schedule. So, what we can do that is now possible is we can now bank recordings. So we can now put in movie reviews as we go to make sure that we are on top of things, so to speak. And what this will let us do is it'll let us get more episodes out with movie reviews on top of just news. So it's not just news, but we'll also have movie reviews in the episodes. And we'll try to keep on top of announcing what's what, so that way we can keep track of. If you want to watch along, you can watch along. So this will be the first week with that. And then from here on out, hopefully, as time is in the schedule, I will record the episodes, add them in after. This also means that when it comes time to do Beware of Spoilers, we can go back to the old format. And if those of you who listened to that from the beginning, it started out where Peter and I talk about a movie before we go to see it, then we see the movie, then we come back and we talk about how it compares and contrasts with our original thoughts. Again, the issue with this is, number one, Peter doesn't have the schedule availability to see every movie on the planet the way I do. And number two, the pre-recording and then editing process was a little bit cumbersome, but now we don't need to worry about that anymore with this new thing, so we can bank all of those at once and then just put them all up. So we'll be going back to that format in the near future, as soon as I figure out where to start with that, considering we have all the strikes going on and what movies are going to come out where. So all of that said, we're going to be getting back to new and better content in the near future. That's the Cliff Notes version of all of that. So let's talk about today's news stories, or this week's news stories. Number one, let's talk about the one that was going to go up last week, but I forgot about it, the Spiderwick Chronicles. So Disney Plus announced that despite having finished a Spiderwick Chronicles TV show and, you know, making it, producing it, editing it, doing VFX work on it, having it done it in the can, they are no longer releasing it to take a tax write-off. And we've talked about this before. Like, this is not, you know, not right to the writers. This is not right to the directors. This is not right to the actors, all of whom are, you know, worked really hard to make this. To not let the viewing public see it means that they don't get to get paid residuals. And for a show like this, I think it is especially egregious because other shows where this has happened, it's been kind of established people who have done other things. Like, to an extent, like, when this was done with Batgirl over at Warner Brothers, like, Leslie Grace had already been a lead in a movie, or she was a supporting actress in a movie, because she was in The Heights. So she had that, and she had that on her resume. She can always point to that and be like, I did this, and everyone can see that I did this. Batgirl would have been a bigger audience, but she at least has that to fall back on. And even if it is like, if the narrative becomes, the movie's so bad it would have tarnished the brand, that's why we couldn't release it. Even if that becomes the narrative, you can still go back and point to, well, I have this performance that I did a great job in. The issue with the Spiderwick Chronicles is that I think it's a mid-grade book, which means that the main characters are young. The actors involved are young. Likely they don't have any credits, or very many if they do have some, credits to their name. So you are already putting them in the situation where it's like they were in this show that Disney looked at and assumed this show won't make us any money or turn any subscribers over. And now we will, now they're just going to be stuck. Now they have to deal with that. And if I'm that actor, it is this, when you look at, those kids will have to deal with that stigma on this project, even if it's not true. And even if, Bob Iger comes out and says, look, we're not, it is not a knock on the acting performances of them. It's not a knock on this. It's not a knock on this. We are taking this tax write off because we want to, save the money, yada, yada, yada. We want to focus on bigger IPs. It's still not good for those actors in a vulnerable place, having just put all this time and effort into this. It's demoralizing is what it is. And if they're listening, I'm not saying that they're probably not listening to this podcast, but there's been no evidence to suggest it has anything to do with quality. It seems like it's part of a wider thing by Disney to try and focus on established IPs, which, again, I think is not a good long-term solution. I think that putting all your eggs in the Marvel and Star Wars basket is not a good long-term solution. I've talked about this before. When Lucasfilm bought the rights to Children of Blood and Bone and then let them lapse and then it went over to Paramount, that was a huge mistake. And I think that the big mistake that they can make is having Lucasfilm and not turning it into Clark's World or not turning it into Asimov's or something like that, where it becomes a production house for science fiction. Where it's like, we will option science fiction, we will let directors work on that, and then if they want to move on to Star Wars, and you still want to have Star Wars be that crown jewel, look, if you want to work on a $50 million science fiction movie or a science fiction series, by all means, here's the money. That should be what Lucasfilm should be. Because that, you will get, that will get you people watching. Option books by Becky Chambers. Option, This Is How You Lose a Time War would be perfect for this kind of thing. The Spiderwick Chronicles would have been great for this. It's fantasy, but still. But they lost out in that transition. And that was a mistake by them. And I think that this transition to, we're going to focus entirely on established IPs, and then Spiderwick Chronicles not being one of them, is a sign of what's to come. And, that's the kind of thing that I heard they're making a Spiderwick Chronicles show, and I'm like, oh shit, I know what that is. I mean, there was already a movie back in, 05, 06 from Nickelodeon, but, okay, we're going to remake it from Disney, and it's like, oh shit, okay, we know what Spiderwick Chronicles are. It seems like when Disney says established IP, they mean stuff that's been around that they can kind of, control. Like, Percy Jackson, they're going to run into the ground. They're going to run Star Wars into the ground. They're going to run Marvel into the ground. They're going to run anything that they can into the ground. Because if you don't put as much work into marketing it, that's something they want to do. The Spiderwick Chronicles is somewhat established of an IP. It's not like they're pulling the Unwanteds, or they're pulling Children of Blood and Bone even, which would have been more obscure, or Charlie Bone. Or, there are so many other books they could have pulled and then look, we're going to do this and we're going to give it a budget and see what happens. But there's no risk taking. And to say that a best-selling book being adapted to a streaming series is a risk is kind of laughable. I mean, it's the kind of thing where if you heard that 5 years ago, you'd be like, oh, Spiderwick Chronicles, that's a good choice. That's a smart move. I think that these Twisted Tales books that Disney has, those don't even have a chance of getting adapted because that's too big of a risk. It's such a weird thing. Kingdom Keepers was another one. It was a major book series, had major tie-ins in the parks. It was in development from Kevin Smith back in the early launch days of Disney+. but that was, there's too much IP here. And it's like, but why? It's a giant fucking advertisement for the parks. Why wouldn't you do that? Why would you do anything else? Like, it's just silly. And if we're going to sit here and be like, okay, so we have to do this, what's it called? This whole, world of, like, you know, we have to do Star Wars, we have to do Marvel. It's like, well, I don't know that you necessarily are going the right path with these things. I mean, we've seen, you know, Marvel and Star Wars recently, and it's not exactly the cultural juggernaut it was. It's not catching on. And look, Marvel, I've said it before, I think that Marvel is just in a little bit of a lull because it's coming off of the high of Endgame, and now it's got to rebuild to build to the next Endgame in the form of Secret Wars. So, look, to an extent, they have to do that. But for right now, it's not the juggernaut it was. I mean, look at the box office this year. Like, we've had two Marvel movies come out. They are not in the top five. They're not in the top three. The top three movies right now are Barbie, Super Mario, Oppenheimer. Guardians is four. And I mean, look, Oppenheimer is up there because of the Barbenheimer thing, and I totally get that. I don't think that if it wasn't coupled with Barbie on the same release day, Oppenheimer wouldn't be as high as it is, I don't think. But to say that this is a, you know, to say that Marvel is, you know, is doing well, I don't know. I mean, look, I think there's a world in which we can see either side of it, where the Marvels comes out and does 2 billion or a billion, or the Marvels comes out and does another Ant-Man and the Wasp does 500 million. Either way, it could happen. And I don't know. That, like, it is kind of one of those things where it's like we need to sit here and readjust what when we say established IP, we would have thought in the past that books would be counted in that. But established IP appears to just mean things that they 100% own the rights to. And then there was a rumor that the Spider-Man Chronicles being, you know, axed in this way puts it in a weird limbo from here on out, where the author of the book will never get the rights back to try to go to another studio to get that movie made. So that is just done. The Spider-Man Chronicles movie that we got in the mid-2000s, that's it. That's what we have to deal with. And there will be no other iteration because Disney now perpetually owns the rights. I don't know if that's true. I saw someone said that, and I can't guarantee that it's accurate. If it's true, it's a big loss, and it's not fair to the writer who signed that deal. I would have, because it's the kind of thing where it's like, oh, well, she shouldn't have signed that deal. But when these deals were being signed, the idea of producing something and making it all the way through to the end and then being like, you know what, we're just not going to release it, that was never something that would happen. It would get axed before that point, usually. But yeah, I mean, look, there needs to be a better solution to this. And I saw Stephen DeKnight said months ago, it's like, look, if you're going to do this, you should have to pay a fine. Or if you're going to pull it from a streaming service, you should have to pay a fine. And I don't think it's in the current deal that's being offered by the WGA and SAG, but it certainly is something that should be considered. Because it's getting ridiculous, where it's like these things are being made, and you are screwing the writers, you're screwing the directors, you're screwing the actors who would get royalties on these, who signed on for these lengthy projects with the promise of you're going to get paid down the line on this for the next, you know, for the rest of your life or 10 to 15 years. Like, if that's the case, they deserve a little something, you know, they deserve something for that. It's not right. And I don't know, we'll wrap up on that one. Our next story is the end of, not the end, but the shift of the release slate for Disney Plus, for Marvel Studios. Both of these are Disney-related stories. This comes courtesy of The Hollywood Reporter, and as usual, we will take this with a grain of salt. We typically don't take these stories 100% seriously until it is reported by Marvel Studios or whatever it is. But it's The Hollywood Reporter, so I think it's worth our time to take a look at it. So what we have is this year, Loki is still slated for whatever week it was slated. The first week in October, I don't remember the exact day off the top of my head, but Loki is still slated for that. What If is now slated for Christmas of this year. Echo has been pushed back to January. X-Men 97 has been pushed to early 2024. Agatha now is called not Coven of Chaos, not House of Harkness. Now it's called Darkhold Diaries. That's been pushed to late 2024. Ironheart, Wonder Man, and Daredevil Born Again have all been delayed indefinitely. Now let's break this down. What If Season 2 coming this Christmas feels weird, and I'm not entirely sure why that's the case. We've seen toys arriving in store for X-Men 97. I'm not entirely sure why they'd move What If to this Christmas. That said, What If has been done for a while. I'm not 100% certain what's going on with Disney here and how this is working out for them. Why are they putting these release dates so waiting so long for these with these things done and just sitting there? So I'm not entirely sure what that's about. Echo, they're moving to January under this, which would give them the... This is, I think, a strike-related thing. I think that this is a show that you want the cast out there for. Loki Season 2, you don't need to have Tom Hiddleston out there doing press. You don't need to have Jonathan Majors out there doing press. I think, in fact, it probably benefits them to not have Jonathan Majors out there doing press for Echo. You don't need to have Owen Wilson out there doing press because these people have already, you know, done their, you know, they've already done the first season. So it speaks for itself. It ties into the wider multiverse storyline. You know, you don't need to worry about moving that. Echo, it's been 2 years since Hawkeye. People probably forgot. This is very much Alka Cox being, you know, doing a character-driven thing. So you want her out there as the face of this. You're also going to want to have Vincent D'Onofrio out there talking about Daredevil. You're also going to want to have... Charlie Cox out there talking about Daredevil. You're going to want the two of them out there talking as much as possible about who's in the show and why they should watch it. You're going to want to have the actors out there doing press. You can't do that until the strike ends. January will give them time to resolve the strikes, hopefully, and then have it come out. X-Men 97, again, dovetailing in with What If Season 2. I'm not entirely sure why you wouldn't put this first and then put... What If Season 2 there. I think this has something to do with Deadpool 3. That would be my assumption. I think this also means that Deadpool 3 should be able to keep its release date. I can't guarantee that, but that's just how I interpret this. Because looking at the costume that Hugh Jackman's wearing in that one picture, it looks like he's wearing a comic-accurate costume. And if he's wearing a comic-accurate costume, you're going to... I would assume it means it ties in some way to X-Men 97. So you put that there, that puts you closer to Daredevil, to Deadpool, and that gives you a little bit more synergy between the two. Agatha, House of Harkness, moving to late 2024. It's not surprising, because I think this is similar to Skeleton Crew, which I think gets moved to next year as well, because that's still on the release slate, and I think that the Acolyte... We talked a little bit about this a few weeks ago on Exploring Hyperspace Lanes. I asked Josie, do you think that these shows move? I think the Acolyte moves to early 2024. I think that the... what was the other one? I think that... Skeleton Crew moves to early 2024. The Acolyte moves to mid-2024. Andor moves to late 2024. And I think that Agatha moving here is probably just they still have work to do and they still have additional photography to do, and they're going to want to tie that into you know, have it all done and then release it there. Or it could be something to do with the fact that it may have something to do with Christmas. It may have something to do with a winter theme, because it seems like any release window they give is always winter time for this show. So moving it there would put it in that same space. Ironheart, Wonder Man, and Daredevil have all been delayed indefinitely. That comes down to the fact that all these shows were still in principal photography when the strikes hit, so they did not finish shooting yet. So delaying them indefinitely just means we don't know when we're going to be able to finish these things, and then we will have more information after we, you know, after we complete filming. But yeah, so that's kind of, you know, it for, you know, for those. Again, we're going to see more of these delays as they happen. We saw this recently with Dune and with Warner Bros. Releases. We're going to see more delays, I think, before any strike is resolved. I don't foresee the strikes resolving at some point between now and October realistically, because we're now in September and we haven't seen any real movement. I mean, there have been some discussions between the WGA and the AMPTP, but who knows? Which actually brings me to another thing that I wanted to talk about, which is the AMPTP going to survive these strikes? And I think one of the things is there is one studio that's uniquely situated to come out of this, come out of this in a position of strength. And what I mean by that is I think that Paramount, specifically Paramount, should they break with the rest of the studios, and Viacom is what I mean, Viacom as a whole, break with the rest of the studios and negotiate independently and sign a deal. That would situate them in a very interesting position going forward. Because there's a world in which Viacom comes out and goes, look, we're done with this. We want to just get this over with. Let's move on. Viacom could then have 100% control of scripted television for the spring season and have that jump on everyone else. They could have that, they have a lengthy jump on production, getting stuff out and making sure their dates get hit and having like no flux on what release dates happen. And then on top of that too, they get the good press of, look, we broke. We're gonna give a good deal to the writers and the actors, and we're gonna we're going to be the pro worker studio. That gives them that ability. And we've seen the beginnings of studios start to independently negotiate. We saw Hallmark has a deal to produce some of their stuff. We saw that A24, Neon, Roadside Attractions have gotten these interim agreements, but the biggest is AMC. AMC got an interim agreement for The Walking Dead, which is huge, which means they agreed to the terms put forth by SAG to do that. That's huge that they did that. If they're breaking, then we could be in a situation where I think one of the bigger studios could break too, and I think it's going to be Viacom. I think that, Universal doesn't need to because of Comcast. I think that Disney has enough additional revenue streams where they don't have to, and they don't want to have to divulge information about Disney. And they are big into AI. They don't want to have to divulge information regarding what they're doing there. And I think that Warner Brothers, with Discovery and Warner Brothers producing all of their reality content, they don't need to worry about that until we get to a point where these reality TV shows start unionizing within SAG. And I think that if it comes down to it, Viacom's the one who breaks. And if Viacom breaks, then we're good. Then we're good. Then we start getting more stuff coming out. And I think I think they're the ones who will, if there's someone who's going to do it, I think it's going to be them. But that's all the news we have. Let's talk about a movie. I watched for the first time, and keep in mind, I was a few months old when the movie came out initially, so don't give me too much shit for having not seen this movie before. Leon the Professional. I watched it last night. Luc Besson directed, and I think that this movie is a lot more, it's there are heartfelt moments, there are, these weird, weird things that by today's standards you're like, that's a little strange that they put this into a movie. And if it happened now, it's the kind of thing where you'd have a certain subset of the population who is like, and look at what Hollywood's doing. And to an extent, I would say that it is a little weird. I'm not going to argue that it's not weird, the relationship. But it's a parasocial relationship that's formed between this 12-year-old girl who goes from having her entire family murdered to being taken in by a hitman and has to live in that new situation. And I think that, Natalie Portman is just fantastic in it. And looking back, this movie worked so well that it offset her shitty performance in Star Wars, which again isn't on her, it's on George Lucas being a bad director. And at the end of the day, I think that this movie is, it really is, fantastic. I really enjoy it. I think Gary Oldman is great. He's just the right level of over the top. I think that the plot about this, this guy who is like, I'm, you know, he feels like he has nothing to live for because he has, you know, he's just a killer. And then to have this relationship with this girl, and it's not a romantic relationship for him. It is, you know, it is the paternal relationship that she is misinterpreting as, you know, as romantic. That is, you know, that's really interesting to have him go through that, and then to ha feel like he has something to live for after that. And then for her to, after that, learn to be a, you know, to be a better person herself is also interesting. I don't know. I feel like this is, you know, it's the kind of thing where, like, I was like, when I sat down to watch, I'm like, how well is this gonna hold up? Because the movie's almost 30 years old. It holds up very well, and visually, it's great. I think Luc Besson directed the hell out of this movie. And yeah, I would. If you haven't seen this movie already, I would very highly recommend you check it out. The only reason I'm keeping this one short is because I do have something to do in the next 10 minutes. Definitely check this movie out if you enjoyed. I don't know, maybe some of his more recent work hasn't been the best, like Lucy or Valerian or anything like that. But this movie is still fantastic. And again, going off of what we talked about earlier, like The Fifth Element's a risk, and there was a risk taken on that movie. And look at that; it's a cult classic. But yeah, we'll wrap up there for today. Our next movie we're going to talk about is Bottle Rocket next week, the first movie of one Wes Anderson. Our next movie after that is going to be Hell or High Water, and the next movie after that is going to be Ford versus Ferrari. For those of you who are looking to see what we're going to be doing at the various film festivals in the area, I think the only lock we have so far is The Boy and the Heron at New York Film Festival on October 1st. So we'll be doing a review later that day. Zone of Interest, I still have tentatively put in for October 8th, but I'm not 100% certain on that yet. Because that movie is also playing at Hamptons. So when we see the Hamptons schedule, we'll keep you posted on what's going where. Yeah, I think that's all we really got. Until our next episode, have a great rest of your week.